Hi, and welcome. This is Mark Pitstick, your host at Ask the Soul Doctors. The great news is, no matter what your apparent ailment, the soul doctor's diagnosis is always the same. You are perfect. You are one with the one and an integral part of source energy. As such, you have everything you need to handle all of life's changes and challenges with style. It's not easy, but it is possible. And the more you realize this, the more you see this earth experience for what it is, a totally safe and magnificent adventure amidst eternity. We're excited today to have with us Dr. Bernie Siegel, one of my great teachers from over the years, and I've been reading his book this last week, his latest book, The Art of Healing, and Bernie's a perfect guest because he has personally experienced so many of the categories of evidence in Soul Proof. He had a near-death experience when he was young. He's had a number of after-death contacts, hearing from patients who passed on. He's had past life experiences, authentic mediums, this guy, and intuitive. So he's the man. He's done it all. Bernie, welcome.
Thank you, Mark. And let me say that I didn't seek out anything. It all happened. So that's what made me a believer, because of what I experienced. And, you know, in a sense, saying what you said is the introduction, that it's amazing the potential that resides in all of us. And when people are willing to give it a try, you know, I always say show up for practice and have others with experience coach you, then amazing things can happen.
Well, I certainly appreciate you sharing this information over the years. I've been with you for many years through all of your books, and you've been such a way shower and opened up so many doors for others. So great to have you. And we're, as you know, we're going to answer what I've collected as the top 10 most commonly asked questions from people around the world. It took me a while to realize that people, whether they were in the United Kingdom, India, Spain, Australia, wherever, they're asking the same questions. And I know you have some great wisdom from your professional and personal experiences. So let's get started. First of all, the number one question, who am I? What is my nature?
I'm laughing because that's easy.
Yeah.
You see, my way of saying it is when you get to heaven and you're on the admission line and they say, you're next, how do you want to be introduced to God? If you say, I'm a doctor, God says, come back when you know who you are. And so who am I? I'm God's child or God. Either one gets you in. So my answer to who am I, how do I identify myself? I'm one of God's family, you know, one of God's children.
You're right. It is easy, especially when we look at life with eyes unclouded by fear. Second most commonly asked question I get is, why am I here? Okay, so if I'm a child of God, a part of God, what am I doing in a place like Earth?
Well, the best answer I heard when we were introducing ourselves at a support group, you know, I said to people, why are you here? And one guy said, I'm here because I'm not all there. I always love that. And, you know, why I think we're here, well, let me put it another way, because I am on the board of directors of heaven as a consultant. And God is always talking in parables, which confused me. And one day God said, you're a satellite dish, a remote control, and a television screen. And I said, I don't understand what you're talking about. And the answer was, there are many channels out there, you know, that the dish could receive, many voices speaking. And I give you a mind, a brain, like a remote control. You have to select what you listen to. And then I give you a body to demonstrate what you're listening to, like the television screen shows the program. And I'd say that we're here to demonstrate. The problem is, who is your God? You know, what channel are you tuned into? And when you see what the world is like, you know, a lot of people tuned into the wrong channels, you know, material things, all the things we have wars about and fight about, and I'm right and you're wrong. But if you were here, my term that I have is to be a love warrior. I'm here to be a love warrior. And to define that, it means I use love as my weapon. So if people drive me crazy, I love them. And that confuses them and they don't know what to do with me. Because I know they're acting that way because they didn't grow up with love. And I'd say what we're all here to do is to reparent each other, to love each other, so the other person knows they're worthwhile. Because the opposite of love is indifference, rejection, and abuse. Not hate and fear. It's indifference, rejection, and abuse. When you grow up with that, you are here for the wrong reasons. They're self-destructive as well as destructive of others. Hey, all you need to do is listen to the news, what's going on in this country and all the killing and violence and then suicides and it just goes on and on. Imagine walking into a school, not with a gun, but getting up on the stage in the auditorium and yelling out, I love you, I love you, I love you. Yeah, I've done that at high school. There are 1,000 kids sitting there, and I said, I want you to know I love you, and if you need a father, I'll be your father. Because a young lady who was suicidal told me I was her CD, a chosen dad, and it helped her to see she was accepted now by me. I always say I don't have to like how she's behaving or my patients are behaving, but I can love them. Then they come to love themselves, change their behavior, and it becomes life-enhancing instead of self-destructive.
So, Bernie, when you were young, as you've written about, you had a near-death experience, choking to death, and you realized that when you were out of your body, you were ready to go. It was okay if you didn't come back. You liked it better there than you like it here.
Yeah.
But what is it about the Earth experience that you understand that helps us grow, helps us learn to love? What is better about being on Earth, let's say, in some ways for spiritual growth that's maybe not possible in spiritual realms?
Well, I found, especially as a physician, it was a struggle to deal with all the things that we were not really educated to deal with. I mean, that the that what we learned was how to treat disease, not how to take care of people or ourselves. And as I searched through these things, two things came up that I read about. One was a rabbi, the Baal Shem Tov in Russia, seeing Jews being persecuted by the Cossacks. And he said, I wish I were God. And his students who were standing around him said, oh, you would stop all this. And he said, no, but I'd understand why. And that's a question I also ask people. Not only how would you introduce yourself to God, but if you could be God for a day, why would you want to be God? And almost everybody is improving the weather or stopping wars or doing something. And I say, no, that's not the right reason. The right reason is so you'd understand why. And then many years ago, I read a wonderful story called The Next Voice You Hear by Edward Albee. In it, and this takes place in the 1940s, you know, before all the kinds of communication we have now. So God speaks to everybody. I mean, people think it's a joke. They don't believe it's God. But at the same moment, in every language, all over the planet, they hear God's voice. And then God does some things to prove it, that, you know, that that it's really God. He said, I'm going to sink Australia for 5 minutes and then it'll pop up again so you'll know, you know, it's me. And the message, though, in the story that really struck me is a perfect world is not creation, that we are here to live and learn.
The third question we get, what happens after I die?
What happens? Your body dies. Your consciousness does not. So that's part of why I think that, you know, to go back to the previous question, that we are here to live and learn. If we raise our level of consciousness, we create a future world that is better for everyone. Because what I consider past lives is that we are all impregnated with the consciousness of those who have preceded us. So you feel like you lived that life because you're aware of it in your consciousness. Though I don't, you know, see it as myself living multiple lives, but I see myself as being aware of a past life, of a multiple life, and the experience in it, and therefore it affects me and how I behave here. So when I quote unquote die, as I say, my body gets left. I love the words of William Saroyan, who incidentally wrote a book called The Human Comedy. And I consider life a comedy, but it's a tragic one. But in any event, in a story he wrote, a young man dies. The last three words in the story, he becomes dreamless, unalive, perfect. And when we leave our bodies, we don't take any afflictions or problems with us. It's just our consciousness. So, you know, people who are born blind have a near-death experience, see again when they're out of their body. And that's the part that I've realized with various patients, too, who have had experiences and shared them with me as well as my own, that it never occurred to me, because this happened so many years ago when near-death experiences weren't subject that anybody was discussing. How do you think and how do you see when you're not in your body anymore? But those were things I was not having trouble doing as I watched myself choking to death on a toy I had aspirated. And again, we are that consciousness. So we die in the sense of our bodies, but our consciousness doesn't and can go on and help improve the world or make it worse. You know, if you're bitter, resentful, hateful, and you impregnate a future, you know, life and body, then that person will be bitter, resentful, and who knows what they'll turn out to be because of the experience that you have brought to them. But if you bring them the experience that says we need to love the world, we need to befriend each other, that we're all wounded, we need to help each other, then you turn out to be a very different human being because of what is within you. And again, these things are working at the level of consciousness. You know, that we're not, when I say that, we're not intellectually aware of them, but we still are aware of them in the sense of how we feel about certain choices, certain lives, occupations, relationships, all kinds of things, because they are a part of us. And yes, I think that's often why people go for therapy, so they'll understand themselves better. It could be, you know, psychiatric therapy, past life therapy, hypnosis, all kinds of things. But the better you know yourself, the more intelligent your behavior becomes in the sense of being life-enhancing and not self- or life-destructive. And I think that's, to me, what we're all here for. I always say to people, you're here to contribute love to the world in your manner, not one imposed by others, because that's a big problem. What all the authority figures in your life tell you, how you should behave, what you should be, what you ought to do, and then you've lost your life. But not the physical life, but the meaningful, real life.
Right, important difference. Well, pardon? This is Vintage Bernie. The fourth question we get a lot is, will I see my departed loved ones again after death? And the second part of that, you know, we both know about after-death contacts, but people ask, well, why hasn't my father or mother contacted me? They've been dead for a couple of years. Why haven't I had an after-death contact?
Well, the first one, I can only speak from my experience. I have had the experience of hearing voices, and I can only say it's like somebody's talking to me. And I'm out in the street, taking a walk, jogging, riding a bike, doing, and a voice will speak to me. And I know when that voice speaks to me, I listen to it. And just to give you a brief story, the day my father was going to die, I was out exercising before I went to the hospital, and a voice said, how did your parents meet? And I said, I don't know. And the voice said, ask your mother when you get to the hospital. I walked in the hospital room, and what pops out of me, it's almost like the voice, not me, because I didn't say anything compassionate, didn't hug my mother. I just stepped into the room and said, how did you two meet? And my mother started telling stories. because of that question. And they were all very funny. I mean, my father lost a coin toss and had to take her out on the first date. Well, she started with that, and it got worse from there on. And my father died laughing, looking wonderful. And everybody in the room was, in a sense, stunned by the experience. And again, you talk about consciousness. We told people he was going to die that day. We knew who was coming to the hospital. When the last person who had told us, I'll be there, walked into the room, he took his last breath. He's aware of that consciousness too, I'm sure of that. So he waited until everybody arrived. Then he died looking healthy and wonderful and not leaving anybody in that room with any fear of death because of how simple and easy that transition was. So, again, to me, that's a source. Another is a patient of mine who was, I didn't know it, but she was a mystic. And when she learned, she said that I wasn't a normal doctor, in a sense, she said, you know, I can talk to you differently now, and I asked for a message for you today. And here's the message I got from Frank. If I'd known it was this easy, I'd have bought the package a long time ago and not have resisted so much. I called up Frank's wife because I knew who it was. It was a doctor who was in our cancer support group and had died. And his wife said, oh, my God. I said, what do you mean? What are you talking about? Did I upset you? She said, no, no. It's just every time we left the meeting, he would say, I can't buy the package. When my father died, my mother dies a year or two later, and I get a call from Monica. She doesn't know my parents. She doesn't live near them. The phone rings. Hello. You folks are together again. They're proud of you. And they're being shown around by someone who likes chocolate and cigarettes. Oh, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross is showing you folks around. Now, Monica does not know that Elizabeth was a really good friend of mine and helped me in my journey and got me, you might say, into this area through looking at a drawing I did and knowing so much about my life from a drawing that was, you know, I mean, just something I made up of an outdoor scene. And she had so many bright and intelligent questions to ask me that I started pursuing these things with my patients and at the hospital. And the other thing, I always talk about finding pennies as a sign from God. This is the message, liberty and in God we trust, and Abe Lincoln who reminds us of our mortality. And I think that's a sign. I mean it, too, because it's not of any great value, but it's the message on it. After my mother died, I found close to 36 pennies. And the thing, again, that was so fascinating and mystifying, I would go down to our mailbox, we have a long driveway. On the way back, I would see pennies on the driveway. Now, I would not have missed them on the way down there. But how did they get there? And the great-grandchildren started, when I told them about the pennies, my mother's great-grandchildren, not mine, started saying, oh, they're pennies from heaven.
Some people ask, well, why haven't my departed loved ones contacted me? My mom or dad passed on 2 years ago. Why haven't I seen any visitations? What's your understanding about that, Bernie?
Well, I think there are several reasons. One could be the people are thinking too much and don't, what I call, take the lid off. You know, it's like opening up your consciousness. My father appeared to me in a dream when I was having difficulties with his death and just the whole concept of death years ago. And he appeared in a dream looking wonderful with a big smile. So that took care of it for me. But I'd say to people, stop thinking about it. Even visualize the people who have died so they know it's okay for them to come back, that they're not going to upset you or hurt you or make it a painful experience. The other is, don't look for them necessarily, but look for signs, things that interested them. Your son dies, a teenager. He had a collection of butterflies in his room and was studying them all the time. The father goes for a walk in Connecticut. A butterfly, a beautiful butterfly, comes to him and follows him. He goes home and looks it up in his son's room. It's a butterfly that exists only in South America.
Mm-hmm.
How does it get to Connecticut?
Love it.
See, I had a patient of mine die on one of the Hawaiian Islands to straighten out a relationship with a mother who was living there, so she went there. I show up there with my wife to give a workshop a year and a half later. We walk into a store. Again, there's a butterfly flying around, confused by the lights. My wife reaches her hand up. It lands on her hand because we're always rescuing all kinds of living things and creatures. And we go out of the store, and we're expecting the butterfly to then fly away, but it stays on her hand, flops up on her shoulder, gets in the car with us, goes back to our apartment, goes into the apartment with us. And I said to my wife, it's time to go to bed. You can't sleep with a butterfly, so, you know, go out and brush it off your shoulder. My wife goes out, says, okay, I brushed it off. I said, look at your other shoulder. The butterfly came back in on her other shoulder. And we finally got it to jump off and drink some sugar water that was on the table. The next day, because the butterfly was now like family, I put it in a bag in the morning just before the workshop and talked to people about the symbolism of transformation that the butterfly, represents. And then I opened the bag and the butterfly flew out. And it spent the entire day flying over our heads from 9 to 5. When the workshop ended, it left. Now, I can tell you, when someone was talking about their murdered daughter who loved birds, she was saying, we had an outdoor wedding for her sister, and a bird interrupted the wedding, and everybody said, oh, it's your daughter. At that moment, in through the open window in this building, a bird flew. And, of course, everybody's reaction, it's your daughter. And I can go on and on with these stories because, and more of them come from the parents of children who have died. And when they're in the room, you know, with other parents and the door gets shut, they're not afraid to tell stories. So I'd say look for signs. I mean, one more, just so you understand how crazy some of these things can be. Your father dies, says to his daughter, look for an eagle over your head. If you see an eagle flying in the sky, you'll know I'm there for you, watching you. Well, the daughter moves to California, never sees any eagles. One day she gets a birthday present from another member of the family. It's a big kite, and as she opens it up, it's an eagle. And she calls this person and says, why did you do this? The woman said, I was in a store. Something said to me, buy the kite and send it to her. So I did it. And I say, again, keep your mind open and look for these things. But it's hard if you're thinking, worrying, being intellectual all the time. Just, that's why I keep saying, take the lid off. Let it happen in your sleep. Let it happen during a meditation. Something may come to you, something you find, something you see, even something you read. You may pick up a book. And you'll know it's no coincidence that that happened.
How about this one, Bernie? We get a lot. Some fundamentalist religions, as you know, teach that suicide is an unforgivable sin, a one-way ticket to hell. What's your experience and belief about what happens to the life force of people who take their own lives?
What I'd say is the same thing that happens to people who, you know, die of a disease or an auto accident or old age, that the consciousness continues on and it learns from its life. See, that's why when I was saying that if you were impregnated with the consciousness of someone who committed suicide, I think you would have a very different feeling about life. But again, when you grow up, see, I always say the biggest public health issue on the planet is parenting. When children, I mean, these are studies that are done, college students. Did your parents love you? No. By middle age, 98% of them had suffered a major illness. Did your parents love you? Yes. 25% had suffered a major illness. So again, you know, the self-destruction comes because you don't feel like a child of God. You know, you're a failure, you embarrass us, we didn't want you in the first place, you ought to commit suicide. I mean, those are things that, you know, I know people have heard this from their parents. And I know parents who committed suicide and said to their kids, we don't love you enough to not kill ourselves. But my hope is that those people will have learned something. Because one young man I was helping who had AIDS, I was amazed at his statement. He called me because I was trying to help him survive. And he said, I'm going to commit suicide. He had been sexually abused. His parents, it was a horrible life. He said, I'm committing suicide. I said, wait a minute, Tony. Instead of killing yourself, I can get you a gun. We'll kill your parents. That's what the other kids are doing. He said, no, I never want to be like them. That touched my heart. And I have to add a happy ending. When he went down to the subway station, as he said, to jump in front of the A train, the train didn't show up. And so he called the suicide hotline. And they came and rescued him. And as he said, I learned about love from the people who came and rescued him.
And so suicide, usually not an optimal course, but even for those who do, life continues on and consciousness continues on.
You know, I keep saying that we don't die. The we is our consciousness. And my hope would be from the experience of that life and the suicide that you realize, see, what I try to say to high school students, 70% of them in one study said they've contemplated suicide. What you need to do is eliminate what's killing you, not yourself. And I don't mean go kill your parents, but you can say, you know, you can call authorities and say, my parents are abusing me, I need to get out of here. You can quit your job, you can end a marriage. You don't say, I'll make this marriage work if it kills me. No, get out of there if it's affecting your life and your health. But if not, see, that's where I say be a love warrior. Because I do know people with alcoholic parents who started saying to them, I love you, every morning. 3 months later, she came into our support group with a big smile. I said, what happened? She said, you know, I was saying I love you nothing. This morning I was late for work. I ran out of the house. My parents were in the street screaming, you forgot something. I said, what did I forget? I got everything. You forgot to say I love you. And that's when they all started crying and hugging each other. So, again, if it's affecting your health, risking your life, get the hell out of there. Eliminate it. Don't kill yourself.
And, Bernie, what's your experience and beliefs about ghosts? Do they really exist? And if so, what are they?
Depends on your definition of a ghost. But it's hard for me to define them. Like, again, I'd say they're a manifestation of consciousness. I got one letter or email about two people in a family who had been killed in an accident, and a member of the family had a wedding. They didn't postpone it. They decided to go ahead. They had those disposable cameras for everybody, and in the camera, when the pictures were developed, there were clouds, I mean, you know, like people around a couple of tables, which were the families of the two people who had died, and that was a mystical experience for everybody. I've had four instances where I could have been killed. Auto accidents, choking on the toy, falling off the roof of our house, and always walked away with no injury. And I have to tell you this as a bit of humor, and then I'll get back to something that was mystical that has happened to me. But I said to an audience one night, I must have an angel. I mean, because I can't explain how a ladder breaks and you fall off your roof and you land on your feet and don't have any serious injuries. And a man came up to me after the lecture. He said, you have an angel. I said, really? He said, yep, I know his name. I said, what's his name? He said, what did you say when the ladder broke? I said, oh, shit. He said, that's his name. And I can tell you, that guy has gave me a favor because I've had more accidents since then, and I always yell out those words. And then I start laughing, like when my bike hit a sheet of ice and I'm flying through the air, and I yelled that, and I'm laughing when I hit the ground and didn't have any injuries again. So, you know, that guy gave me a great gift. But here is the mystical part that really blew my mind. There is a spiritual center called Mercy Center near our home. It's in Madison, Connecticut, is where this center is. I was speaking there one night, and I knew I wasn't doing the talking. because I wasn't following my outline. This is way back when, and in those days, you know, I'd make an outline and know I'd cover all the points. But I wasn't paying attention to it. And then I thought, what the hell? You're doing a good job. Just talk. So I spoke for 2 hours. At the end of the lecture, First Lady came up, said, that was really good. I've heard you before. It was better than usual. I said, thank you. I agree. The next one came up and said, standing in front of you for the entire lecture was this man. So I drew his picture for you. And it's a picture of my inner guide, George. Now, how do I know? Because doing a guided imagery, which in those days I didn't believe in, but one of the exercises was you walk along a path, meet an inner guide, and this fellow walked up to me. I didn't understand his outfit. He had a funny cap on his head, long robes, and he said, my name is George. And he became my guide. And I have drawn his picture before this episode at Mercy Center. He was in the picture I drew for Elizabeth Kubler-Ross years before. And here this woman draws him. And the reason I say that is he's got a big beard. He's not a normal-looking guy. You know, if somebody said, hey, there's a guy standing in front of you, and he looks like everybody else, fine. But not this picture she handed me. A couple of years after that, I'm at a funeral, speaking at a funeral for a friend of mine on Sunday, Christian funeral, and I'm speaking. I'm done. They leave. I'm standing in the empty building in the hallway. The mystic and healer, Al Gawarl, who is a friend of mine, also knew the man who died, happened to be at the funeral also. She walked over to me and said, Bernie, are you Jewish? I said, why are you asking? Because I spoke at a Christian funeral? She said, no, it has nothing to do with that. There's a man standing next to you, a rabbi. And she again described him, and it was George. And that's when I understood why he had a cap on his head and, you know, his garments. They were all related to his rabbinic outfit. And it just, again, you know, kind of blows your mind. So
sure.
Do I think there are these spirits? Well, I have to say there are because of what people have said to me, what they have seen. But again, I think they are capable. See, even Jung said it in a different way. He said the future is unconsciously prepared by, you know, in advance. Is unconsciously prepared long in advance and therefore can be guessed by clairvoyance. So I think these people who can quiet their minds and then can communicate with you or see around you, visualize these things, which I tend to see through dreams and drawings, which I will ask people to do or to tell me about, and then I can interpret those. I do believe that we have these spirits around us. Now, whether you call it energy or consciousness or anything else, I don't know. I don't know how to define it. Just as quantum physicists and astronomers, I mean, you know, we can't tell you how we got here in the first place. Life is a mystery, but it is a mystery with potential in it, which is put into it to help us all survive. So I don't let beliefs limit my life. If I experience it, I believe it, even if I can't explain it or understand how it happened, but I know it did happen.
From personal experience. Well, how about this one? What is your understanding of what God, source energy, is like?
All right, my definition of God is loving, intelligent, conscious energy. You know, God is not a person. God is loving, intelligent, conscious energy. Those are the things that you need to create a universe, see? And Jung talked about numbers, too. Numbers are the key, and I mean that literally. All the memories that are stored in us are shown through numbers. And some of this is in my new book with 70 drawings. What I mean by that is when a reporter draws a clock on the wall behind her with one hand pointed to 12, and I say, what happened when you were 12 years old? The interview changes because she bursts into tears and tells me, see, about the abuse she experienced. And I can give you many examples. But the numbers, as I say, are the way we store things and have meaning in them. As Jung said, they are discovered and invented, have quantity and meaning. So there are a lot of ways. Now, to get back, you know, you might say to God that another number that has always meant a lot to me is the number 10, you see. Because out of the nothing, in other words, out of loving, intelligent, conscious energy, it's no thing. You can't describe it. Comes the one. So, and there are people who mention that the Bible has it wrong. God was created. See, now it isn't that there was God and then God created. God was created first. So out of the nothing comes the one. But as Jung said, but one isn't anything. One times one, one divided by one, hey, what do you got? One. When does life begin? Add a human being, now you have two. Add animals and all kinds of other life, now you got three. Add plant life, now you got four. And when you add up one, two, three, and four, you got 10. So out of the nothing comes the one. And just to be a little more mystical, all the numbers on my birthday are multiples of 10. I was born the 10th month, you know, 20th century is 19, and the days and the years are the numbers 1, 2, 3, and 4. So I don't think that's a coincidence either. I think that was a special day and a special message that I was born on that day.
Well, to my listeners, you can see why I wanted to interview Bernie. He has such a vast amount of personal experience and understanding. By the way, his website is BernieSiegelMD.com. And his latest book, The Art of Healing, he's written many books, starting off with Love, Medicine, and Miracles, Peace, Love, and Healing. If you want some great answers to your questions, how we can best live now, how can we best hear the voice of our higher self?
Oh, yeah. I mean, what impressed me is the theme of the still pond. The ugly duckling recognizes he's a swan. Why? Because he doesn't walk away cursing his mother for throwing him out of the house. And Joseph Campbell talked about a tiger brought up by goats when his mother dies giving birth to him, who doesn't know he's a tiger until another tiger tells him he, you know, is a dumbbell and doesn't know who he is. And again, takes him to a still pond, says, look, you're a tiger, you look like me. And Joseph Campbell talked about it like yoga, meditation, you quiet your mind, you see who you are. And that's the key, that if you're always thinking, worrying, you know, giving others the power to define you, you never see yourself because there's turbulence in the pond, in the water. But when you can quiet your mind through meditation, whatever technique you use, and look, you will see in the still pond who you truly are. And I also say to people, put photographs of yourself around your home and where you work to create little shrines, especially of yourself as a child, and love that child. So whenever you go by, you see the beauty in that child.
And you found that the art therapy used, and by the way, listeners, in this book, The Art of Healing, many pages of actual drawings from patients and what he learned from them, the lessons.
Yeah.
He found that this is another way to hear what the inner self is saying to us.
Yes. I mean, you might say the unconscious. I really feel that the reason we sleep is to give the consciousness a chance to speak to us through symbols, whether it's the body or, you know, emotional issues. Physical, psyche, and soma are one. And they both can speak to us. But, you see, you have to turn off your intellect to get that to happen. And that's what happens when we're sleeping, meditating, and so forth. I mean, I have people, when I say draw a picture, say this to a male engineer, he writes a page of instructions on what needs to be drawn and never draws the picture. I mean, that woke him up to what he was like. Or a lawyer who says, I came to a conclusion that was eminently logical, eminently reasonable, completely logical, and completely wrong, because while learning to think, I almost forgot how to feel. So you've got to be open to these other things. And then, again, the truth can come forth to you. But there are many aspects of our lives that cannot speak in words to us, so they have to speak in symbols. And when people draw a picture of themselves, they reveal things about themselves that need to be corrected or enhanced. because they relate to your health and wellness and everything else. Your life is stored in your body, let's put it that way, and you need to deal with those things and resolve them.
And great for you, great kudos to you for introducing this into the healing fields with your background as a surgeon. I think more people will listen to you, to what is considered perhaps a soft science, but there's a lot behind it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, here's one that I get a lot from around the world, and people basically asking, how can I make sense of and make peace with the religious teachings of my youth when they don't make sense to me now as an adult, that there's a fiery eternal hell, there's only one way to heaven, ludicrous things like being gay is a sin. What would you counsel people about that one?
Yeah, I've been called satanic and occult by a minister down in Mississippi because I taught meditation and imagery, and Satan could take over your images. I said to him, I'll tell you what I'll do. I will give my lecture based only on the sayings of Jesus. If Jesus didn't say it, I won't say it. And that shook him up a little bit. You know, maybe I wasn't such a horrible person after all that I knew about Jesus. But, you know, the problem is, I think, when people are fundamentalists, words are their God. They need security. So, see, that's their interpretation. What I like is to interpret it, if you know what I mean, to sit and debate it. In Judaism, they'll do that. They'll take some statement and say, what do you think God meant? And then they look into it, so you're not stuck in some, you know, regulation. It means this, it means that. I see that Billy Graham just had his 95th birthday. A man wrote him a newspaper article, and it said, does God want me to have cancer? And I couldn't believe Billy Graham's answer. It was not necessarily, but maybe God wants you to have cancer. It'll make you more spiritual and bring you closer. Now, that's why, you see, yeah, that bothers me about religion. The guilt, the shame, the blame, you see, that you heap on people. And what I liked was Maimonides' statement. He said, first of all, he said, if people took as good care of themselves as they do their animals, they'd suffer fewer illnesses. But he also said, and this is why I like, see, interpreting disease. It is a loss of health, he said. So if you find what your neighbor loses, you return it to them. So that's what I say to people. And I said, this is what I asked Billy Graham. If you lose your car keys, does God want you to walk home? If he said, of course, I'd say, then you're living the sermon. I don't have a problem with you. But if he said, no, I go back in the building and look for my keys. I said, then next time somebody asks you, does God want me to have cancer, say, no, you've lost your health. Go look for it like you'd look for your car keys. And to me, as I said, that religion, I like what Joseph Campbell said. He said, to think of it as a guidebook. See, I like reading all the religions because I had to learn that for some people they were a problem. I got along with God, okay? My grandfather was my teacher, so I didn't have a problem with my behavior, you know, and following rules. It was a dialogue that we could carry out, and it wasn't about doing it wrong, being punished, and everything else. But I started reading religions and realized how much guilt, shame, and blame is built into them. And this is from 1824, which I think reflects on what you're saying, how we feel about, you know, the various types of people you just mentioned. 1824, Pope Leo XII, smallpox vaccination is available for the first time. The Pope declared, if you vaccinate yourself against smallpox, you are no longer a child of God because God decides who gets smallpox. How would you like that one? How would you like to go home and say to your kids, I can't vaccinate you because you won't go to heaven. So it's okay to die of smallpox. The present Pope is lightening up a bit there. I like him. You know, to at least have a dialogue, open up. You see, love is blind. We're told that in the Bible. To what? To our faults. You see. So if we can use love to blind us to each other's faults and start a dialogue, we'll realize, hey, the way I put it, we're all the same family. How do I know that? See, I can take a photograph of a human being on this planet, show it to you, and you have absolutely no idea who it is. Now, when you say the third and fifth graders, what's it a picture of? But let me make it a little more difficult. I had a black minister at my house. Lovely guy. We had a wonderful chat. We go out to the car, but he had friends in the car. So I said to them, I got a picture of one of us, and you can't tell which one of us it is. And they looked at me like, I'm nuts. He's black, you're white. What are you talking about? But the minister, I knew, would know the answer. He pointed at his chest and said, our hearts. It's a picture of our hearts. And that's what the kids yell at you. We're all the same inside. You're damn right. We're one family. And that's what we need to understand. And it's not about religions and separation. It's about coming together and becoming one.
Well, we've come full circle talking about being love warriors. And folks, we hate to end this show. I could listen to this guy all day. I know you could as well. The good news is you can visit his website, BernieSiegelMD.com. He has books, DVDs, CDs, answers to questions, free videos, a wealth of information there. So let's learn from the wisdom of this wonderful man. Bernie, thank you so much for being with us.
Bless you. And I always say we all run out of time, you know, when we're doing programs, we run out of time with our life. So enjoy your lifetime.
That's right. So live it fully.